You can make great wine, but if you can't sell it, you're nowhere.
You know, I'm the guy that loves the cat piss descriptor.
To be a winemaker, you need to be a little bit crazy.
If we really do want to spend 20 hours a day here through harvest, why not have as much fun playing and doing as much different things as we can?
It's definitely different every single year.
We make a white Barbera, which is called Carica l'Asino, which, by the way, means load the donkey, and we don't know why.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 284. This week we feature The Agricultural Labor Shortage, Part 3. We return from a three-week vacation, refreshed and ready for the next round of winemaker interviews. A reminder to our listeners to please send us a note with your opinions, critiques, thoughts, and suggestions in regard to our program. We want to hear from you. Write to ray@lifebetweenthevines.com. Labor is not only a big issue with the wine business, but also around the country and the world in general. Where is your future labor force coming from? How do you hire quality workers? Where will they live? For this program, we again visit this concern and talk with five winemakers from Napa and the Willamette Valley and get their thoughts on the problem. We welcome your comments on this issue as well. First, we begin with Chris Kennefick of Kennefick Ranch in Calistoga, Napa Valley. One subject I want to get into briefly is something I've talked to a lot of winemakers about, and that is the problem of labor issues out here in California, although the entire West Coast is dealing with. Do you have any problems? Are you dealing with any labor issues right now?
Yes and no. So yes, I think that it's always an issue in the area in California that there are these labor issues and continue to be labor issues here. We have completely lucked out in that we have a family that we've been working with for about 30 years now out here, and we provide housing for about six of them here on the vineyard. So they are as much part of this this vineyard and this family, the Garcia family, as our Kennefick family. So we treat them like our brothers and sisters out here. So we at least have a good core group that's out here. After that, it definitely does become an issue where we have 10 people. It would be great if we had 12 people working out in the field. So there's always a person or two missing, which is definitely a concern or an issue kind of all over Napa.
Well, and two, if I'm not mistaken, the laws change next year in terms of how many hours the vineyard workers can be in the field. Is that right?
That is, yeah. I don't know all the details on it, but they definitely are kind of tightening down on the amount of hours that that field workers can be out there.
And grapes don't wait.
Yeah, exactly. When grapes are ready, they need to go. So we've luckily, when we've been going through our replantings, we've replanted everything to be able to do anything by machine harvest. That's not really a direction that we would like to go. We always want to do everything by hand, which we are currently. But if it does come up and the labor laws tighten up enough, then we'll be ready to switch over to machine if we need to.
Sure. You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Well, the other side, too, of this whole thing with the workers and the people, the family you talk about, is that there are inherent dangers in this business, in any farming business. And we were just talking about snakes and spiders, but there's machine accidents. This is a risky job. Mm-hmm. And I think people don't realize that. Mm-hmm. That there's a lot that goes into making that wine, and there's dangers that go into it.
Yeah, there definitely are. And even beyond just the dangers that you might see out in the field, the exhaustion factor really gets to you. So for us during harvest, when you're starting at 2 a.m. and going until 11 or noon, that catches up with you pretty quickly. So people get worn down pretty easily. So you need to make sure that you have a good crew and taking care of that crew.
Next, we feature David Namarnik of Aloro Vineyard in the Willamette Valley, Oregon. I don't know what your concerns are when it comes to harvest here and labor, but many wineries, especially in California, have been dealing with labor issues, not being able to get enough people to help them during harvest, let alone the rest of the year. Do you run into any of that here?
You know, labor for agriculture in general is a challenge. So the labor is tight, and so it's pushed up costs. Our harvest costs we're paying for our workers has gone up. We've been able to get enough help to get the crop off. So it hasn't been a problem for us as far as getting the help. It is a challenge for us. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's everyone worries about labor going forward. So we're all looking at ways to kind of minimize our labor inputs. We're trying to automate where we can. The problem with Pinot Noir is it takes so many passes to the vineyard. It's a very, very delicate grape to grow. It's a very fickle grape to grow. So there's numerous passes to shoot thin, multiple passes to leaf thin. There's the fruit thinning or green thinning, where we actually take green grapes off so we get the crop load balanced with the canopy. And all those things are hand done. You can't mechanize those. You just can't. So it's a challenge. There's a lot of input labor costs, but thankfully we've been able to get enough labor. There's a large nursery industry here in the state.
Yeah, there is.
And so because it's one of our largest agricultural commodities. So because of that, there's a lot of labor in the nurseries, which are close by. So we're able to get, there's a pretty good pool of labor in the area, so that have been involved and there's also year-round work in the vineyards. You got the pruning in the wintertime, and in the spring you've got the wire, you're moving wires, and then in the summer you're doing your passes. So we keep our crews pretty busy year-round. So in that regard, it keeps the labor force in the area. So we've been fortunate up till now, but it's a long-term challenge. I mean, it's something I think long-term we're going to be dealing with, just because of the fact that the labor force is getting older. The immigrant workers that are here, if you look at the average age in the vineyard, in the last 20 years I've been farming, they're getting older. They're not the 18 to 25-year-olds. It's more like 25 to 40-year-olds or older. And so we're seeing that it's an aging workforce, and there's fewer workers crossing the border, as much as whatever you hear in the paper. More Mexicans moved back to Mexico than moved into this country last year. So that's simple math. You can see the numbers are getting smaller.
Right, right. And I've also heard issues, too, where there are many of the Mexican workers that live here, regardless of legal or otherwise, are afraid to leave because they're afraid they're not going to be able to get back in.
I'm not sure. I can't comment on that. But I do know that, in general, the labor issue is a challenge, something we'll be dealing with for the next however many years we're growing grapes.
Do you bring in interns at all?
No, we don't bring in interns for harvest per se. We have in the past brought in interns to work in the winery. This last year, we actually hired an assistant winemaker, so that's kind of taken the place of the intern. So we have a gentleman that's doing a great job as an assistant winemaker, and then he also during the year is helping with other projects. Maybe it's some of our social media, or maybe it's some other things, other projects we're doing inside the winery or tasting room. So he's kind of in a small boutique winery, you wear a lot of hats. And so he's done a great job of being even from repairing the lock on the door. So he's a handy young man. He's kind of a creative type. So he's been a great addition to the team.
There's only so much elbow room.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Next up is Julie Johnson of Tres Sabores, Napa Valley.
One subject I've gotten into with a lot of winemakers is in the valley, in the wine business in general, and in agriculture, there are issues with labor. Are you running into these problems? And if you are you doing anything about them, any kind of action you're able to do?
Well, politically, certainly encouraging candidates to be strong and to be vocal and to take action.
Yes.
Because I think that's where it needs to come from.
I agree.
I think that there's a very sophisticated pool of labor that we're increasingly competing for. And I think that at the same time, there's a pool of labor that's diminishing with successive generations. And also because who wants to be in a vineyard for 8 hours in the sun? So you're dealing with a lot of modernizing societies. At the same time, you're dealing with what I feel to be some very parochial and unfortunate political manifestos being imposed on farming, which I don't know where the long-term thinking is, but I don't think there's any long-term thinking. So that's really disturbing. And unfortunately, I think for a vineyard like my own, which was set up to be, was set up with old California sprawl, I mean, there is nothing that's going to allow me to farm this mechanically, other than disking and hoe plowing and spading. And you know, I think as more vineyards get ripped out and more vineyards go back in and they're all going to be mechanically harvested, and I think we lose something. I think we lose some soul. So I'm not putting myself up with any banner to say, oh, I'm going to save that part of our heritage. But I think it is important to understand, you know, literally the roots of where that cessation of in human involvement is. So I can still do that because I can control this, and I can work with this myself, and with my small team we can pretty much do this. And we pick very small amounts, and so it's not like getting in a huge crew and just bulldozing through. But there are a couple times a year when we do need that, and so I go to outside sources for that, and that's tough. Yeah. It's tough to find the timing. The reason why we do everything else ourselves is that, especially for organic ag, you need to be able to pinpoint you're not farming on a schedule. And that's contrarian to what is probably economic and when people own multiple, you know, hundreds of acres or whatever. But the idea of controlling your production is probably both socialist and also necessary, and a source of pride for what I do. And the fact of valuing, I take every opportunity I can to tell my guests, share with my guests how skilled the labor is that's involved with every stage of this. And I can't change people's minds, but some people are genuinely curious. And I think it's important that people understand that this is not just, you know, I mean, I couldn't even give any example in agriculture because there's an art to picking strawberries. But here in vineyard territory, I think it's ever more sophisticated and important that our need is recognized and acted on. And it's a shame that it's ridiculous and demeaning. And yeah. It's demeaning to the people who are working so hard here.
I agree.
Who are in the shadows or who are, that's the worst. The people who have to live in the shadows, and especially now, and in fear for being separated from their families and so on. This at its heart was a family industry of immigrants.
Right.
And so what do we do with that history except to celebrate that and try and underscore to the people who are making some of the rules that's important to carry on.
Right. Understanding farming. So much farming is like that.
Understanding that. Yeah. Really understanding that. So when we're celebrating health of soil, it really means healthy people and healthy communities. And so I think the vintners with the wine auction, with the Napa Green program, with all of the sustainability programs that are going on around the country, I think that as they incorporate social justice modules in their certification programs, I think that's essential. And so along with encouraging people to economize, to recycle, to be wise stewards of the land, there's that social justice piece that just increasingly is ever more important. And that has to do with safety too, but that's something that I think small and large landowners here recognize. That's one of the things that I think holds us together in Napa Valley, is a spirit of not protectionism, but just camaraderie and best practices. And that's definitely part of the best practices, is that scope for labor, and doesn't make the problem go away.
But. No, but I admire your thoughts. Next, we feature Stephen Rogstad of Cuvesan Winery, Carneros, Napa Valley. We've talked to a lot of winemakers about the labor issues in the wine industry in general. We're not just talking about Napa Valley. So many areas are having a difficult time getting interns, let alone getting full-time workers. How's it affecting you guys here?
It's definitely a challenge. Like a lot of wineries, for the vineyard side, we outsource our farming to a vineyard management company. So they're responsible for recruiting and hiring the labor that they use. They farm. The company we work with has been in Carneros. They were one of the first vineyard companies to actually focus on Carneros, and they farm for a number of wineries down here. And so they have a very good, pool of employees to pull from. But even for them, it's getting more and more challenging. And then on the winery side, especially in the last 3 to 4 years, it's become more and more difficult, obviously, with some of the immigration rules and changes, it's less interesting for people to come from overseas and work a vintage because they have to pay to do that in the first place. And then it's just harder to get in and do that stuff. But we usually hire 4 to 6 foreign interns every vintage.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I'm guessing because we're clearly in a very hilly area, I'm assuming machine harvesting isn't exactly the kind of thing you're going to be able to employ here, or do you?
We do some. There's been a real improvement in mechanical harvesting in the last 10 years, and a lot of it revolves around a company from France called Palanque, who not only provide mechanical harvesting equipment, but they also do a lot, they build a lot of the mechanical sorting equipment that wineries are using in Bordeaux and here in the Napa Valley now. And basically this equipment is on board these harvesters, and what it's really doing is sorting out what we call MOG, which is material other than grapes. So it's basically leaves, shoots, you know, bird nests, anything that could fall into
small children.
Anything that could fall into a mechanical harvester that you don't want.
Right.
And it sorts it before it ever goes in there. So it does a really, really clean job of picking the fruit. Obviously, it impacts some winemaking decisions. So, for example, one of the things I love to do is whole cluster pressing with Chardonnay. Well, if you mechanically harvest, then you can whole berry press, but you can't whole cluster press because the cluster's still out there on the vine. So, you have to decide, you know, what the trade-offs are and what you're willing to do. The other thing with a vineyard this old is that a lot of it wasn't set up for mechanical harvesting, and it's not just the hills, it's the trellis systems and the designs that were used. So we certainly have areas here we can and do mechanically harvest, and then we have other areas that just aren't feasible to do.
Sure.
And certainly Mount Veeder is in that category.
I can't even imagine. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about, the vineyard behind me. Is that something when you designed that, was that with mechanical harvesting in mind?
Yeah, I do not like to mechanically harvest Pinot, in part because, again, sometimes I like to use whole stems in the fermentation, and it's a very delicate berry that breaks very easily, so there's myriad reasons why, but yes, we did set it up so that it could be done either way. You know, one of the things I really learned in a vintage like 2011 is we had an extraordinarily short window to harvest before we were going to hit by a very significant rainstorm.
Yeah, right.
And we mechanically harvested a fair amount that year because there was no way we were going to get it off the vine in time. Down here in Carneros, for Chardonnay and Pinot to go through in a rain event like that, then you would have a very short window before botrytis was just everywhere. So yeah, you really gotta move fast. And so particularly with the Chardonnay, that really saved our bacon, if you will, that year. In terms of the labor front, you know, certainly every vineyard, every winery is exploring more mechanization, not so much of the harvest, that's one thing, but you have to understand that all of these clusters, all of these vines are touched by hand several times during the year. There's shoot removal that's done by hand, there's leafing that's done by hand, there's shoot positioning that's done by hand, there's pruning that's done by hand, sometimes there's a pre-prune and a final prune. So if you could say, well, let's mechanize our pre-prune where you're not really making a very intellectual decision, you can go through and you really want to get the brush out of the wires, then that's going to be a huge savings labor-wise. And then you can come back and by hand make your final cuts where the person really needs to be thinking about, you know, the architecture of the vine and that year's crop and how many buds they want to leave and that kind of thing.
Sure.
So where you really want every cut to be done by hand. So there's certainly a lot of savings, you know, steps. And then even with the pruning tools, even if you're working by hand, now you have these kind of automated. They're not automated, but they're powered.
Power, right.
Yeah, yeah, so it's much easier on the workers to do the pruning, and they can prune, you know, more vines with fewer hours. So
I've heard some of the workers wear these gloves that are kind of like Kevlar gloves, so they don't.
Yeah, you don't want to cut off a.
These tools are powerful. No, that would be bad. You know, I guess I kind of want to get across to our listeners, though, is while a lot of people are employed doing this work, these mechanical harvesters ain't cheap.
No, they're not.
They're astronomical.
They're very, very expensive. And the fact is that these machines can do more than harvest. They're over-the-road tractors. So where we've made investments in them, we use them to do normal other farming activities as well, besides just the harvest, because otherwise it just wouldn't be economical, really.
Sure. But behind that, as a piece of equipment, you also have maintenance that comes with that, which
yes.
is also cost.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just getting at the idea that, you know, sometimes people look at a price of a bottle of wine and will kind of grouse about it a bit, but the work that goes into it, to your point of how many times your workers visit the vines, uh-huh. let alone using these machines in certain cases, let alone these powered tools, this all adds up to the price of a bottle of wine.
Yeah, and in 2010, we became one of the first wineries in the valley to start really experimenting with mechanically sorting our fruit. It's not mechanically, it's optically sorting our fruit. And we trialed equipment for 2 or 3 years here, and then we purchased our own equipment. And generally, this is only done by Cabernet houses where you're getting a lot of money per bottle.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So there aren't a lot of Pinot houses that have optical sorting equipment. And but we just felt that the ability to really select every berry was important to us. And we added the equipment. It actually slows down our processing. It doesn't speed it up. It sounds counterintuitive,
Yeah. But
you actually have to go slower with your pre-sort and running on the sorting table. Now, the machine can sort berries very, very fast, but it's getting the berries to the machine that takes that is much slower. So we're not able to crush as much fruit per day as we used to be, but that's fine. We really want to make the best wine, so
it's all about quality.
Yeah. So we've invested in this equipment, and we hand sort clusters, the old-fashioned way, with human beings.
That's good to know.
And then we let the machine take over and do the berry sorting, and it's really quite amazing because you can program the software to basically pick out exactly what you want.
I've seen videos of those machines. It's nuts. But it also shows how far technology in our world has come.
Yeah, yeah.
Finally, Alex Sokolblasser of Sokolblasser Winery in the Willamette Valley, Oregon.
We've done a few podcasts on the labor issue, which is certainly big in California.
Yes.
And it's also big around the country in different states, kind of depending on what kind of grapes you're growing and what you're doing.
Yeah.
What about here in Oregon?
Where do I start? The wine industry, at the base of the wine industry, is farming. We are value-added farmers. Besides the cigar industry, there is no industry that does value-added farming better than wine or cigars. And what I mean by value-added farming is you grow grapes, and we grow grapes, and we add a shit ton of value to that. We ferment it. We put it in a bottle. We market it. We sell it. Same thing cigar guys do too. Your soybean growers in Milwaukee, in Wisconsin, it's a commodity. They just, there's a price for a bushel of wheat. There's a price for a pound or whatever it is for soybeans and corn. It's commoditized, and they're not adding value to that. It's just they're just growing it. But we are value-added farmers. And not only are we value-added farmers, a wheat farmer can farm 1,000 acres with his or her ass in a tractor. One person can farm 1,000 acres of wheat. Boom. To farm 128 acres of wine grapes here at Sokolblasser, we need about 30 people.
Yeah.
So it's a labor-intensive industry. And so we depend on labor. And traditionally, a lot of the farm labor throughout the years have either come from huge families or immigrants. Immigrants have formed the basis of trucking and transportation industries, agriculture, and washing dishes, because you know where you can get a job when you hit the soil of the United States.
Yeah.
Way before Trump, about 5 years ago, Mexico started to be a net importer of labor. So 5 years ago, people were not pouring over the border to come to the United States. if you were, people were actually going back home because the economy of Mexico started, they became a net importer of labor. Sure. The tables turned 5 years ago. So everything that's going on right now is like, wow, the cat's left the bag, guys. No, people aren't coming here looking for work. It is something that I think about every day is labor. Labor is getting tighter. Not only, you know, 5 years ago, it started getting tighter because Mexico became a net importer of labor. So people started, you know, heading back. But also the economy is doing so well right now. It's been burning hot really for here in Oregon for the last 2 years. So it's been hard to get people. So we are mechanizing as quickly as we can, but there's still things that we need to do by hand. So labor is a really big issue, and will continue to be a big issue. And that is, you know, unfortunately is so politicized these days that you can't have a straight conversation without someone going off the rails.
No, there gets to be a lot of passion about it.
There's a lot of passion about it. Yeah. Yeah. That and trade for whatever reason. So
in the end, we need the people to do the jobs, and hopefully we'll be able to still get them.
Yeah, we will.
Politics or otherwise.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I only have 2 boys, and sometimes I wish I had 10.
Yeah,
10. But, you know, it is what it is.
That family labor. It's right. A totally different conversation.
It is. My parents had 3, and I only have 2. But, you know, yeah. Maybe I'll tell my boys just... A lot of kids, guys. That's how you're going to make this work.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like that idea when one of the kids gets promoted and they go, oh, am I going to get paid now?
Right, exactly right. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. And remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2018.